Blog Talk Radio.
BDPAI Radio showcases IT entrepreneurs, technology experts, and computer science academics. We highlight people with a passion for educating our youth in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. BDPAI Radio Show serves the BDPA members, sponsors, entrepreneurs, educational institutions, and the black community. BDPAI Radio, linking business, education, and technology.
Welcome to the BDPAI Radio Show. I'm Jayla Cruz. Tonight is Tuesday, February 23rd, 2016, and our guests are Dr. Juan Gilbert, Computer and Information Science Chair at the University of Florida, Kobe Burrell, Computer Software Consultant and Contractor, and finally, Lawrence Belton, Assistant Vice President at Wells Fargo. Our co-hosts include myself, Tim Butts, and Ron Story. Our studio engineer is Everaldo Gallimore, and our producer is Fran McNeil. With that introduction, let's get started with our first interview. Tim?
Good evening, iRadio audience. This is Tim Butts, and I am here in Houston, Texas, and we will be diving into the first interview with our first guest. I am privileged to introduce to some and reintroduce to others Dr. Juan Gilbert, who's the Computer and Information Science Chair at University of Florida. Good evening, Dr. Gilbert. How are you?
Good evening. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Great. Oh, it's our pleasure. It's our pleasure. Now, forgive me, but I have never been to the University of Florida. What city are you in? What city is the university in?
The University of Florida is located in Gainesville, Florida. I'm 2 hours from Orlando and about an hour and a half from Jacksonville.
Okay. And with that said, I'd like to introduce a little information about you so our audience is better acquainted with you as we go into our interview. Dr. Juan Gilbert is the Andrew Banks Family Preeminent Endowed Professor and Chair of the Computer and Information Science and Engineering Department at the University of Florida, where he leads the Human Experience Research Lab. Dr. Gilbert has research projects in spoken language systems, advanced learning technologies, usability, and accessibility, ethnocomputing, culturally relevant computing, databases and data mining are also on his toolkit. He has published more than 140 articles, has given more than 200 talks, and obtained more than $24 million in research funding. He proudly is a fellow of the American Association and Advancement of Science. There's a lot more that I could share with you, audience, but throughout our interview, I will grab some snippets from the introduction and the information bio that I have on this prestigious gentleman. But that said, I'd like to jump into the interview, and we'll get chatting. So, good evening again.
Good evening.
Dr. Q. Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Now, it's our understanding that you have been involved with or been a supporter or sponsor of BDPA for some time. Can you give us a little background on that?
That is correct. It goes back to 1997, when I had joined the Cincinnati chapter of BDPA. At that time, Wayne Hicks was the president. He introduced me to the chapter, and I've been a member ever since. And going to conferences and meetings and just getting in where I fit in. So BDPA has been family for many, many years. For me, through my graduate education, and as a professional, as a professor, so it's been very good for me.
I see. That's tremendous. And you mentioned the name of our esteemed sponsor, Wayne Hicks, who helps to get us all corralled and herds us together. As we are across the country, we are in various cities across the country, and that's how we do our show. Mm-hmm. So it's a tremendous opportunity to chat with you. And as I continue to look through this litany of honors that you have, one thing that interests me is that as you said, 1997, you came in, a member of the Cincinnati chapter, but yet here you are now, the chairperson of the Computer and Information Science Department, University of Florida, also doing excellent things, very creative things within the world of high tech. Tell us a little bit about how you have transitioned from being a student to being a leader and a scholar in IT.
Well, that transition has been over many years, but essentially it involves a lot of perseverance and hard work. For many years, being an African-American in IT, it can be a very lonely journey. But again, that's where BDPA helps, in that you actually can meet people that look like you doing the things that you're doing, and that builds community. So being able to have those models, and particularly for young people, I like to say if they can see it, they can be it. If you put that in front of these young people, it really helps them to aspire to higher levels. And I'm one of those people. When I was going through the program, getting my PhD at the University of Cincinnati, I was the only African-American in the program.
Wow.
Come to find out, there was another one in the computer engineering department, and we didn't even know each other. So it could be very isolating, but BDPA helped with my leadership development in the sense that I had a community.
Now, you mentioned right there leadership development. So I'm going to share a couple more tidbits with the audience about you. Check this out, you guys. In 2012, Dr. Gilbert received the Presidential Award for Excellence in Science, Mathematics, and Engineering Mentoring from President Barack Obama. Right. He also received the American Association for the Advancement of Science 2014 Mentor Award. He was recently named one of the 50 most important African Americans in technology. He was also named a 2015-2016 AAAS Lemelson Inventor Ambassador, Speech Technology Luminary by Speech Technology Magazine, and a National Role Model by Minority Access Incorporated. Dr. Gilbert, these are fantastic honors, yet here we are so esteemed. We are honored to have you in our presence to share, but I love the way you've broken it down. You said, if you can see it, you can be it, and it does take the hard work. It's not just going to happen. It's not going to fall in your lap. But you set a goal, you stay the course, you persevere, but you also have focus. You work hard. Tell us a little bit about how that plays out and how BDPA has been part of that journey.
Well, again, for me, when Wayne Hicks found me, and I don't even know how we met, but it was
a chance meeting.
Yeah, he found me. It was a chance meeting back in 1997. And if you know Wayne, no one would be surprised by that. So he said, look, we have, you know, Black Data Process Association. I didn't know anything about it. He said, we have a meeting coming up. We meet at the Urban League. Come check us out. So that's how it all started. And for me going through my process, it was, again, isolating, pursuing the PhD, and having an opportunity to go to the BDPA meetings where I could see other professionals, where I could meet people who understood the language that I was talking. It was very refreshing and encouraging, especially during those times when things were a little rough. So I think it's one of those things where you don't want to be isolated. And what you want to do, if you want someone to fail, you isolate them and take away resources and community. And so by having BDPA, it really gave me an opportunity. And it just increased over the years. It started with just going to the Cincinnati chapter meetings, then going to the conference and meeting Jesse Bimley and understanding about the students working in BDPA, the programming contest. All of those things, you know, can make connections to broader communities throughout the country even. So that – you can't underestimate the power of community, and that's very important.
That's exceptional, and what a rousing way to speak about the organization. There are those that are even involved and very engaged in the organization, But as we do our work and our normal jobs, I'll speak for myself. I am very honored to be chatting with you and really put in perspective the ability to focus at an academic level, to struggle, but know that with a sense of community, you can overcome the struggles. And then to be polished by your peers in the midst of all those different things you're going through. You didn't just get through the grind and come out on the other side. You came through a finished, polished product. I'm not even say finished, because I know the wise of us know we are never finished products.
Mm-hmm.
But,
mm-hmm.
But still, the fact that you are sharing with us, I really hope that some young kids out there right now are listening, taking notes, and just taking, gobbling it up, because to see it is to be it, to hear it is to endure it and to endear it. And you're just sharing some amazing things with us.
Yeah,
tell me
and
a
I
little
would,
bit about. Yeah, go ahead.
I would extend that to say, yeah, definitely the kids. But I also want to make sure that the professionals are listening and understand your role. Don't underestimate your influence. You know, just because you didn't teach someone, you know, something about Java or some programming language or something, don't underestimate your ability to inspire someone just by them knowing you exist. It's very likely, in my particular case, I had never seen an African American with a PhD in computer science until many years after I had, you know, I had just gotten mine. So you can't say that just because, you know, I'm talking to these kids and they're not paying attention. You don't see it that way. But from their perspective, by them seeing you and knowing that you exist and what you do, enables them to be able to be that someday. So just the acknowledgement of who you are is very important.
That's tremendous. That's a tremendous way of looking at it. That point of view and that frame of reference. The diversity in the various roles we play within the whole field of IT, engineering, science, math, it's very important for us to look in the mirror and know we are part of the role model system for our peers as well as for our children.
Yes.
Do you, as a leader, mentor others? Because it says you're a mentor. You won mentoring awards. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, yes, at the University of Florida. So through my experience of getting my PhD, I was the only African-American, and I said, well, if I ever get my PhD, I don't want anyone to have to experience what I do. And so I was able to get my PhD, become a professor, and so what I would do is recruit two, you know, African-American kids in my lab, and I never let them be isolated. So I recruited two turned into four turned into eight, and it just grew. To the point now where we're the nation's largest producer of African-American PhDs in computer science. No one's produced more than we have. So we've done that. And then we have the nation's largest group of African-American faculty in computer science. We have six African-American tenure-track faculty members. And no one else, most HBCUs don't even have that. So
right.
We've been able to build a community and mentoring these people through the process. So I'll give you an example of something that's really just eye-opening. My students go to conferences, and they'll hear other students talk about, you know, their experience. You know, I'm isolated, I'm the only one. So they put together a proposal for a panel that is called Unisolated, because in their world they never experienced that.
That is tremendous.
Yes.
So now they are so empowered that they can share, one, how to not be isolated and almost invite people by sticking out the hand and using a famous picture of the hand reaching over the wall and pulling somebody else up.
Gilbert Young.
I immediately picture that when I'm hearing what you're talking about. When
that's
I look
exactly
at
what
the,
it is.
That's beautiful, man. That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Even when I'm looking at the description of the lab, in as much as it is a speech technology lab, I think that the content as well as the design of what you're doing is tremendous. What a legacy, man. That's beautiful.
Yeah. We did it deliberately, and you're right. That's part of it, is keeping people from being isolated. And people could go to LabDaze, LabDaze.com, and watch our web series. It's very different. We were at Clemson at the time when we filmed that. But that tells our story in many respects of who we are and what we do.
I just wrote that down, LabDaze, LabDaze.
So tell me, and I don't want to get off this, ethno-computing, culturally relevant computing. Audience, they have a lab that works with ethno-computing. Tell me, what is that? How does it work?
Well, I like to introduce it by asking people a question. Imagine this. Is it possible for any human being to invent or create anything in the absence of who you are?
Wow.
And our answer is no. You can tell me anything that's been created, and you tell me who created, and I can show you how their culture influenced that. So with that premise, ethnocomputing refers to the idea of building computing technologies and things that support computing from a culturally relevant perspective, acknowledging who you are and what you do. Imagine this. Remember Schoolhouse Rock. And many of your listeners resonate with this. I'm just a bill on Capitol Hill.
Yep.
Imagine that whole series, the influence it had on people understanding government and things. And it only aired many, many years ago.
Yeah.
So imagine this. We took that same kind of technology and created algebra lessons that use hip-hop and game-like animations to teach African-American kids algebra concepts. That's a form of culturally relevant or ethno-computing. The idea is looking at who you are and what you do and intentionally incorporating that into the design of these artifacts.
Absolutely. That is amazing and phenomenally brilliant in how you're looking at meeting people where they are. Because in my Christian walk, that's one thing I always do. I try to meet people where they are. I don't come around and say, here's how I'm going to do it and give the same flavor to everybody. First, you evaluate, you talk, figure out where somebody is, and then you meet them where they are. And by engaging them in that fashion, what a brilliant way of doing. This is tremendous, tremendous.
Thank you.
Now, I would say if you had not earned your doctorate, just the pure brilliance of what you've mapped out and what you're doing would have easily earned you an honorary doctorate, because this is something that's not going to be a flash in the pan. Obviously, this is a methodology that you've incorporated, an algorithm that's going to influence many people for generations to come. God bless you, man.
Thank you. Thank you.
Absolutely. Now, for the radio audience, I'm sure they're asking themselves, this gentleman started off as a student. He dived in, became a doctorate, and I know even in that transition, that's skipping some steps. But I would love to know, as you made that transition and maintained the vision of what you wanted to give back, because it's clear that's part of what you're about, both doing, moving forward, but also giving back. There obviously are some lessons learned that you've encountered as you've traveled your journey to this point. Would you like to share any of that?
Oh, certainly. First and foremost, you can't do it by yourself. All right, I don't know your faith and what you believe in, but you're not going to be able to do this by yourself. That's number one. Number two, along your journey, there will be people who will help you out. And everyone that doesn't look like you isn't necessarily against you. And everyone that looks like you isn't necessarily for you. You have to judge people by what they do, not by what they say. And so you understand who your allies are, and you allow people to help you. I often find a lot of our students feel like they have to do it on their own. They have to be independent. They have to struggle. And that's not true. Our counterparts, like my Chinese students, they are very culturally rich in helping each other. There's no shame in that. And we should be the same way. So it's not where you start. It's where you finish that matters. So you have to be open to allowing others to help you. And then we always hear this. Once you get where you're going to go, don't forget where you came from and help someone else. So that's my simplest way of putting what it's like to go along any journey in life, in particular for a goal that you aspire to obtain.
That's outstanding. And that has to be our last word because we're coming up on the end of our interview time. I easily could engage you with a conversation for an hour or two or three. But I'm going to take the initiative of reaching out to you via LinkedIn, and we can have some ongoing conversations. And I will get my tail from Texas over to visit the University of Florida. That's the Gators, right?
That's right. We're the Gators.
All right. All right. I'll make sure I get over there and visit you. But
I would love
radio
to.
Audience,
love to have you.
Super, super. Radio audience, we've been blessed, and we've had a great conversation. Dr. Juan Gilbert, University of Florida, Computer and Information Science Chair. Thank you all so much. And now we transition to a word from our sponsor.
BDPA is the premier organization for people of African American descent in the information technology industry. BDPA exists to advance the careers of African American in the IT industry from the classroom to the boardroom. You can find BDPA on group site, Twitter, and Facebook.
Welcome back. Up next, we have Mr. Kobe Burrell. Let me start out by reading his bio. Kobe Burrell is self-employed. He worked for a number of years as a system engineer with a number of startups. BDPA has known Kobe for over a quarter of a century. We first met him 25 years ago when he competed as part of the high school computer competition team trained by BDPA Detroit chapter. His HSCC team won the 1991 HSCC championship. He later received his college degree from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. His professional career has worked itself through corporations like Fiserv. He is living and working in the San Francisco area, and BDPA, our radio show audience, will love to hear what Kobe remembers about his HSCC training from 25 years ago and what he remembers about his championship run at the conference held in New York. So with that introduction, let's welcome Kobe Burrell. How are you today?
I'm doing really well, thank you. How about yourself?
Doing well, excellent. So you're calling out of San Francisco area.
Yeah, I'm actually
How
in
is
Oakland.
Everything there?
Yeah, it's really good. The weather has been beautiful for the last few days. I'm in Oakland, which is just across from San Francisco, about 7 miles from San Francisco.
Oh, wow. So what type of activities are you involved with there, technology-wise?
Well, my work keeps me pretty busy, but I do try to get to some technology-based meetups when I have time.
Awesome. So how did you first find out about BDPA, and what has kept you involved?
Well, I actually, to be honest, I haven't been involved since I've been in California, but when I was in high school, I did some research at the library. I was looking around for different scholarship opportunities and networking opportunities, and I found it through the Detroit Public Library.
Cool. So what's one of your proudest accomplishments?
Probably my undergrad degree from MIT. I am coming out into the Silicon Valley and having some success and working with different startup companies out here.
How did BDPA prepare you for college as well as your professional career?
Well, it gave me kind of my real first foray into actually like getting into writing code and working with computers, and it actually sort of kind of ignited my love for that, for doing that kind of activity. And it let me know that it was something that I could do, that it was an actual creative and productive outlet and a way to, but also a way to actually have a career in that industry. You know, growing up in Detroit, there weren't a lot of other role models or examples of that as a career path. So that was it kind of opened my eyes to that.
Why are you passionate about technology?
Because it's a way for people to connect. It's kind of like a double-edged sword. So it has the ability to empower and to allow us to connect with each other, but it can also be isolating. And I think if when used correctly and used consciously, it's a way for us to build connections with each other and to solve problems and build community.
Now, I know that you've said that careers in technology can be isolating. But do you have any tips or advice for individuals who are looking to go into such career to expand?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that one more time?
To expand outside of isolation within the technology industry?
Oh, yeah. So I think for me, what I found is that you have to make an effort to get out and to network. I mean, I have a very typical kind of programmer personality where I could actually just sit and write code for hours on end. And I find that, especially as I get older, that it's important to maintain human connections. So with family, with friends, it's just making time to do that. For networking organizations like BDA, a web is available in your area. It's important to do that.
What do you remember about competing in the HSBC?
Yeah, that was quite a long time ago. I remember that it was just a really fun time, kind of working with a team of other people. And just writing code. It was a time of a lot of anxiety, of course, of competing. But I think it was really, really a wonderful thing.
What would you say would, if you had to summarize the conference and the competition in one word, what word would you use?
That's always a tough one. Empowering.
Yes, why?
Yeah, just because it's for being at that age, for all of us being at that age at that time, and just realizing that this is something that we could actually be good at and do when it wasn't ever really something that was on the table before that. I think that was gave us a really kind of a sense of power and fulfillment that we could take with us for the rest of our lives.
Were you always interested in pursuing a career in technology, or when you were younger, did you ever have any other career aspirations?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it wasn't. I always enjoyed playing with computers and video games and all that when I was younger. But I had originally intended to be a veterinarian. And it wasn't until I got to high school and found BDPA, and I had a computer teacher who kind of also encouraged me a lot in that area.
Interesting. Can you expound more on that experience as far as transitioning into figuring out that maybe technology was the route you wanted to go into?
Yeah, I think it was because this was a time, like I said, it was a long time ago before it was as prevalent as it is today, career-wise and just in general in the community. So for me, I think that, in my first programming class and then, kind of just being introduced to that world and the possibility there, my first programming language was BASIC, and, just the thrill of like writing something that could, writing a program that could do something was just, it kind of set that spark in me. Even when I got to school, I actually had started off as an electrical engineer, and quickly found that computer science was the way that I wanted to go, but that actually was a much more natural fit for my personality and interest.
Interesting. So throughout that time, what two lessons would you like to share with BDPA iRadio audience, whether it's career-wise or personal?
Well, I think for me, even at the age that I am, is that, you just never stop learning. You never stop reading. You never stop. These days you can find a lot of information on YouTube or taking classes, but you just never have to stop working on your personal development, especially if you have a career in technology. It's kind of important to always stay abreast as much as you can of what's out there, what career opportunities might be available to you, and keep track of where the industry is going. And the other thing I think is older is also just that it's always to listen to the advice of other people, listen to input from other people, and listen to what they have to say. But the ultimate responsibility, the ultimate decision is for you. So you have to make that for yourself. And there's nothing wrong with making a choice and making a mistake and then recognizing it and moving on and doing something else. It's just a part of life.
Excellent. Those are all great. So in these final moments here, do you have any final things that you'd like to share with the BDPA, our radio audience?
Just kind of what I was saying before about, remembering that technology is something that we can use to empower ourselves and to connect, but that it can also be isolating, and that we have to just be aware. You know, if you're using Facebook or all these other different apps and stuff, that you're not using it as a way to isolate yourself, but to make you supposed to enrich your life, and not to. It's not a detriment.
Excellent. Thank you so much for taking the time out to interview with us today.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me. It was quite a pleasant surprise to hear from Wayne. It was after 25 years.
Sure. And that's a wrap with our interview today. Again, thank you so much. And now we will take a word from our sponsor.
The BDPA Education and Technology Foundation, a nonprofit organization that exists for the sole purpose of funding BDPA programs, scholarships, and services around the nation. Follow us on Facebook, www.facebook.com/BDPA Foundation, or Twitter, www.twitter.com/BDPA.
Hey, good evening. This is Roland Story, and I'm with you with BDPA iRadio. Tonight, we have with us Lawrence Belton. Lawrence, how are you this evening?
Doing absolutely fabulous. Thank you for having me on tonight.
Okay, and we're so proud and elated to have you to share with us this evening as well. And thank you for taking the time to out of your busy schedule to share with our audience as we engage in a conversation around that which you do. I'm going to just dive right on into your brief bio that we have here. And so if you can bear with us, I will share that information with our audience. Tim is a certified security professional who manages cybersecurity and malware threat analysis for one of the major financial institutions, Wells Fargo. The loss of money, privacy, and well-being as a result of people breaking through our cybersecurity at a corporate level and even on a personal level is at an all-time high. We've asked Lawrence to speak to our BDPA radio audience about steps that can take at home, steps that we all can take at home, on the job, to increase our own sense of well-being when it comes to this whole issue of cybersecurity. Just as a thought, is your mobile device, laptop, or computer safe? Are your children safe when they are online? Lawrence will share his insights and suggestions with our audience. And again, welcome Lawrence Belton, Technology Manager, Bobby Fett at Wells Fargo. And again, good evening. So Lawrence, as you've heard our other guests this evening, and we always open up with a question around BDPA and how did you find out about BDPA?
This one is close to my heart. Julius Clark, who's been heavily involved in the BDPA with Wayne, introduced me to the BDPA in 2007 as a way to gain more exposure and understand what was going on within technology in Charlotte, North Carolina, just as an opportunity to, again, gain exposure and also work on my resume and just look for guidance from those that were involved in technology. It was just, it was eye-opening.
Oh, great. And that's just one of the things that I'm proud to always share with the audience is that the history is rich in the give back and the sharing amongst peers in the IT and computing industry and amongst professionals throughout BDPA. Thank you. So you've been involved since 2007?
Since 2007.
Okay, great. In terms of
it doesn't seem like it's been that long, but, man, it's funny to think about it.
It's a time. In terms of your service to BDPA, what accomplishment are you most proud of?
I think for me it was for a couple of years I was not heavily involved in BDPA. I was still there but not heavily involved. It was a turning point for me was in 2014. I won the Most Promising Technologist Epsilon Award and had an opportunity to attend the BDPA National Conference to receive that award. And I think what stood out was, one, it was humbling to have been nominated because I didn't know that I was even in the running to have been nominated and to win. But that was my first experience at the National Conference to really experience the high school computer competition, the championship, watching, and I was completely overwhelmed by the kids' professionalism, how polished they were, and that spoke to each city, whether the kids won or whether they lost. But you saw those kids come in, receive a challenge, and not have the opportunity to make excuses. They just had to step up, and they all worked hard to try to meet and achieve that goal. And it was just overwhelming to there was a child, I think he was in the youth technology competition, out of Chicago, 9 years old, walked up to me, shook my hand, looked me in the eyes, and handed me his resume at 9 years old. It was the most amazing thing that showed how we were, paying it forward with our kids, bringing them up and giving them experience and exposure to technology and what they could do and how it would help them kind of step aside and be different when they went back in their communities and know that there was an opportunity for me within the BDPA, within technology, period.
Oh, excellent, excellent. I like what you shared, that paying it forward and painting the picture of the reach back to a 9-year-old and the professionalism that the young man shared with introducing himself and sharing his up-to-date resume.
That was amazing. And it speaks to, the other thing it spoke to is that for that young man to be polished and ready, it took having a parent, someone to take the time with that child, to instill in him that you are worth something and it is important for you to be prepared and able to talk to people. And at 9 years old, you think about as that child progresses and grows, how much more comfortable that young child and the other ones in the BDPA conference, HSDC, will be in leading conversations with their peers. And not just having conversations, but leading conversations.
Leading and not just having conversations.
Correct.
Excellent. I just love the nuggets our guests drop on our audience month to month. It's like I'm going to grad school twice a month with the BDPR radio audience. It's just awesome speaking with individuals such as yourself, professionals in the field. Tell us something about your current position, and I want to get into those protective conversation of our consumer audience, with regards to what it is that you do and those things that you can raise our awareness around cybersecurity?
Well, I'm a manager. I am a former, just to give you some background, I am a geek, a nerd, you name it, when it comes to technology. But I have the pleasure of leading some information security engineers that manage the technology. Well, I can't go into heavy detail what we do. It's how do we enable a business to mitigate the risk? What are, you know, we go out and my team constantly looks for challenges or opportunities to improve and lower the cybersecurity risk across the board for Wells Fargo. It's a dream come true. It's something I enjoy daily. It's leading a team, and I'm blessed that I love security. I love security at my core, but it's having an opportunity to lead a team and not manage but lead and help set strategies for success.
And can you share with us, our audience, a couple of those strategies for success, something that you've taken to heart?
It's leading, not managing a team. It is understanding in life, and as we go through our careers, whether you're leading, you're a component owner, you're a member of a team. For me, when I lead individuals, what I try to focus on is I try to set the path. I don't try to provide every step. It's allowing people to be themselves to ensure that we get to the same place. We may not follow the same path. They may do something different than I, but as long as we get to the same path together within that time frame that, you know, we need to adhere to, it's watching that and doing that and maturing as a leader, watching an individual grow, watching a team grow and come together. No different than a coach, a great coach managing a football team, a soccer team, a basketball team. You've got these players. You know where you need to go. Can you help guide them and be there when they need help? Don't hesitate to correct when needed, but allowing them to find their way and then come together and find our way to, you know, to get to that point where we need to be. And just ensuring at all times that we never hesitate to grow and change, that we are always looking within ourselves for what more can we do, where can we grow and improve, and not being afraid to ask those questions of those that report to us, our peers, our friends, just always striving to improve ourselves.
How do you help to, in the sense I call it coaching and urging others along with recognizing that of which they have within to improve, to reach that pinnacle of success?
How do I accomplish that? It's humbling myself and ensuring that I'm asking questions, knowing that my way may not always be the right way, that your perspective may be the right perspective, and humbling myself. And by humbling myself, I think what I'm able to do is get to know members of my team, my peers, better, because hopefully they understand that I'm not putting myself on a pedestal that is my way or the highway. It's here is the direction we need to go. Respecting your opinion and stepping in at times, you know, as a manager, there are times when, you know, I need to set direction, but letting that be roughly 10 or 20% that this is what you need to do for this specific reason. But, you know, 80% of the time, here's where we need to go. What do you think? And, you know, how can we get there? And letting you chart your own path. Just, again, just being there to help pick you up and put you back on that path if you fall off.
Excellent. Yeah, I love what you just shared with us with regards to watching a team grow and striving, and most importantly, asking questions. So many times, many of us just get afraid and I guess scared and not asking those questions. And there's nothing wrong with asking a question and being open. And then as a leader, as you said too, humbling oneself. Not knowing as a leader that I don't have all the answers, and that I have others around me that I've been blessed with to be able to go to to be able to share and contribute to our overall goal. So when we look at, again, some of the roles in cybersecurity, I like to say I'm familiar with the products the institution that you're with. I am a customer. And I have to also say that I've been protected through the watchdog process that the company has with overlooking their customer's account. At some point, my financial status was breached, and I was contacted by the bank and they say, hey, there's some activity in your account. And we could call on you to let you know we're shutting it down because it doesn't look like you. And then so I was asking questions and said, nope, that isn't me. They protected me, protected the money. The money was taken out. They put it back. And then we had to do some things with changing the account. And so the bank in itself was proactive. And up to that point, I was kind of leery about, you know, really what does an institution do if your account is breached, if there's identity theft in it, what are the protections? What should I do? And I'm really happy to say that Wellesley took a proactive approach and contacted me, not only by phone call, but by email. And once, you know, I looked into it, it was true. You know, that was not my, you know, I was not in another part of the world making transactions toward that time. So I share that with the audience to know that a lot of institutions, especially a person of your stature, an African American at a high level within a financial institution, providing services to a particular customer base that are real. The threats are out there that's real. I have just to share with the audience as well. One of the biggest threats that the IRS always talk about and look for. That's first and foremost is identity theft, and that's first and foremost. And with cyber identity problems, professionals such as yourself being able behind the scenes provide those protections for that. What are some of the basic consumer types of protections one should do? Say, for instance, in your intro, I spoke about mobile devices. What are some of the things we should be conscious about when using a mobile phone or checking our account or, you know, looking at balances or doing online transfers and things of that nature?
It's a great question. And before I answer that, something you said resonated with when you spoke about some of the protections, some of the things that you experienced. I think it goes back to our vision and values. You know, we want to satisfy every customer's financial needs and help them succeed financially. And that goes to valuing what's right by the customer all the time. And part of that goes to what you encountered of how do we protect you? If something happens, how do we help you? I think you think about some of a couple of things. One is we talk about mobile devices, where mobility really is where we are right now. It's just let's also talk about, you know, keeping our children safe online. I think some of the things that we have to do, and I'll get into the mobility, is focus on paying attention to what our children are doing. When we were growing up, we didn't have cell phones. This is a different generation now. The access to information where we are transitioning away from paper to, you know, truly digital is, and this world is so connected now, it is opening up both positive and negative opportunities for our children. One thing I would have to state that we have to do a really good job of is not being afraid to understand with your child with that device, what is your child doing? Because the risk of something going on or someone taking advantage of that child is very sophisticated, is high. So that's the number one thing. We have to mitigate that risk by being involved with our kids, that if they have a device, what are we allowing them to do? If you have opportunities to use applications, tools with your smartphones, whether it's an iDevice, an iPhone or iPad, a BlackBerry, not a BlackBerry, but let's say a Windows phone, a Samsung, a Galaxy, you name it, those devices, what are we doing to ensure that we're staying active and involved to ensure that we're truly just trying to mitigate the risk of some type of impact? So that's the number one thing with our children, especially if they're so just prepared and sophisticated when it comes to technology. For me to be able to watch my children figure something out in a couple of minutes where it may take me some time to actually read through, it just amazes me. But let's go back to mobile devices. One, patch your devices. Stay ahead. You know, if it's once a week, what we always talked about with desktops, laptops, you name it, patch it. Make sure you're staying up to date in your antivirus and your Windows patches, if you own Ubuntu, your non-Windows, that you're patching your devices, patching your applications. But it's critical with our mobile devices that we don't want to rest on our laurels. Make sure if there's an update for your phone or your tablet, apply the update. Normally, it takes only a few minutes, and it takes you that extra step to ensure that you're trying to protect yourself. When you're at home with your wireless devices, use long passwords. Don't use an 8 character. I know that it can be tedious and it's time-consuming, but the few minutes that you spend creating a very complex password or passphrase can really save you a lot of time versus trying to recover from some loss at your home due to an insecure wireless network or your neighbors sniffing and connecting you to network. I always recommend at least a 22-character password. And, again, I know some in the audience are thinking that's too much, but if you make it more difficult for someone to access your network, they're more than likely going to go somewhere else. That's a lot easier. So I always say that make it, you know, I go with 22 characters. I try to, you know, not use anything that's easily found in a dictionary. Try to randomize it. It's long, but it can save you a lot of time. When you're using public Wi-Fi, be very careful when using public Wi-Fi with, you know, banking. Information where you're having to input data over an insecure network, be very careful there. When you're not using it, turn your Bluetooth off. Bluetooth, not easily, but can be hackable. If you're not using Bluetooth, and I know a lot of us have our headphones, earpieces, our wearables, but if you're not using it, turn it off. One is a good thing, actually, by turning it off. When you're not using Wi-Fi, turn it off. When you're not using Bluetooth, turn it off because it can save your battery. We talked about, you know, the Wi-Fi network, but use strong PIN and passwords. Use them extremely strong. Use your screen lock when let it time out over a few minutes. You know, worst case, you have to log back in. But going back to passwords, that standard 4-character password that comes with your phone, try to use a longer password because the smaller the password, you're inviting people to potentially come in and do something. So I think with those tips, it can go a long way to really help and not prevent everything, but minimize the risk of something happening.
Mm-hmm. So mitigating risk, you mentioned the fact to patch your device, look at the applications, apply the updates to ensure your protection, use long passwords, and you mentioned going with a standard 22-character set. Nothing that's in the dictionary, randomize your password, and then especially, and I'm glad that you touched upon it, with the public Wi-Fi system, and I'd share this with our audience as well, especially when you travel in hotels, there are so many counterfeit networks out there where people put out an open connection so that people would use it just to snatch their information. So double check as well. So on a public Wi-Fi system, as you mentioned, to turn off your Bluetooth. Don't leave that open, or don't even leave the Wi-Fi open as well. Excellent information and sharing with our audience, and it's needed to be heard. I'm glad that you shared it with us. It's very important for our audience to know those tips, and then actually to embed those in your behavior and to use them actively. Are there any others that you can share with our audience in our closing moments?
Just be aware of what you're doing, that a lot of your devices, they'll come not locked down. It is your job when you receive that device to, you know, be aware of what you're doing. And with our kids, just be aware of how secure their devices. A lot of our kids, you know, you'll go places, you'll watch, they really don't secure their devices. They use them a lot, but are they secure? I mean, and one other thing that's not really security related, but please pay attention to your child's posture or your posture when you're using your device. There are some recent studies of a lot of us, when we're holding our devices, we're holding our heads down and looking down. Please pay attention to your posture, because that can, you know, invite the audience. Just go research what we're seeing now from individuals that are constantly on their phone all the time, what potential damage we're doing to our posture and to our necks by straining our necks to look at our phone and just holding that position for so long. So one thing I tell a lot of the tell my own children is, if you're holding a device, hold it up towards your face. Don't look down and strain your neck all the time, because you don't know what type of long-term damage not only are we doing, but that our kids are doing to themselves.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. That is very valuable information. I read a study a time ago with regards to in Japan, that they actually had clinics for addressing issues around using cell phone technology. You know, anywhere from something as common as we fear with carpal syndrome, now, like you said, with eyes, and you mentioned posture. So definitely become aware of how you're utilizing device and how it's affecting your you know, your body with regard to that. That's very good information, Mr. Belton. That's just awesome in sharing with us. In our closing moment, what would you like to leave as some parting thoughts with our iRadio audience?
Well, I just have a few, and I'll try to be brief. But as you grow your career, no matter where you go, whether it's in technology, or business, or entrepreneurship, ensure that you seek out a mentor and a sponsor. The biggest gains in your career will be from those you leverage. Think of them as a map. As you're going through your journey, they can help you navigate your way towards success. You'll be able to experience their life lessons, lean on them for guidance, and with those life lessons, potentially not make some of the mistakes they made and help you move forward. Don't be afraid to fail or take risks. I think through those failures and challenges, when we fall down, is when we grow up and we prosper. When we have things, when things are always easy, we don't at times appreciate what that struggle and really appreciate what that success means. I think lastly, I'm extremely appreciative of this opportunity to appear tonight. I think Juan Gilbert summed it up extremely well. And don't forget where you came from as you continue to move forward in life. Pay it forward. We got to strive to pay it forward and lead by example. I think the one last thing, one of my mentors, Gary Sims Sr., is we as a group need to focus on reading everything we can and learn. Not be afraid to go back in and constantly learn and change, but read. I think that as we are becoming more and more focused around digital, we're spending a lot of time with our devices, we're spending a lot of time, you know, with the television or different things. But then the one thing I think we're losing is that love of reading, which is really going to help you move. So just read every single thing you can, whether it's the newspaper, the Wall Street, USA Today, books, whether technical books, financial books, you name it. Just pick it up and read it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely great information. Reading, don't forget where we came from. Pay it forward. Navigate. Identify guidance and life lessons learned from others, and taking risks, and appreciate that in which have been shared with you. Again, Mr. Lawrence Belton, thank you for sharing with our audience, and thank you for coming on BDPAI Radio this evening. And I'd like to close out the program and thanking our listeners and our guests as we, again, in this night's session. Thank you again, Mr. Belton.
Thank you, sir.
And now a word from our sponsor.
Join the evolution of IT and embrace the digital future at the 37th Annual National BDPA Technology Conference and Free Career Fair at the Washington Hilton Hotel, located at 1919 Connecticut Avenue, Northwest Washington, D.C., from August 18th to 22nd. BDPA is the largest African-American information technology association in the U.S., involved in training professionals and students in the fields of science, technology, engineering, and math. For the past 36 years, BDPA conferences have provided opportunities for innovators like you to get the knowledge and resources that are critical to stay on top. So please, from August 18th to 22nd, you too can join the evolution of IT and embrace the digital future. For more information on BDPA's National Conference and Free Career Fair, please visit www.bdpa.org.
All right. Thank you for joining us on Tuesday, February 23rd, 2016. Our guests were Dr. Juan Gilbert, Computer and Information Science Chair at the University of Florida, Mr. Kobe Burrell, Computer Software Consultant and Contractor, and finally, Lawrence Belton, Assistant Vice President at Wells Fargo. Thank you to our co-hosts, myself, Jayla Cruz, Tim Butts, and Ron Story. Thank you to our studio engineer, Everaldo Gallimore. Thank you to our producer, Fran McNeil. And extra appreciation to Mr. Wayne Hicks, Executive Director of the BDPA Education and Technology Foundation. Thank you, everyone, for listening to the BDPA iRadio Show. I'm Jayla Cruz, inviting you to listen in on the second and fourth Tuesday of every month at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Our next show airs Tuesday, March 8th, 2016. Join us at www.blogtalkradio.com/BDPA.
BDPA iRadio, linking business, education, and technology. The BDPA iRadio show creates a vibrant communications platform that speaks to all BDPA stakeholders. Hosted by Fran McNeil. Sponsored by the BDPA Education and Technology Foundation and the Executive Director, Wayne Hicks. Produced by Everaldo Gallimore. Technical advice by John Melanson. BDPA iRadio broadcasts the second and fourth Tuesday of every month. Join us on blogtalkradio.com/BDPA.